city, his house. No one beats him in his house. Bob McCowan in Primetime Sports. Now. On the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Hour number two of two, or three of three, as the case may be. Is my being on the air interrupting your chatting here? All right, sorry. I'm Bob McCowan. That's Damian Cox over there. That's Michael Grange down there, and this is Elliot Friedman over
here. Did my guffaw get on air?
Your guffaw?
My guffaw.
I don't know what got in on air, but I could hear it. And if I could hear it, my guess is the audience could hear it. So all of you, pay attention.
Damien was making a funny joke about himself.
I somehow doubt that.
And unintentional, but it was funny.
The Montreal Canadiens are in top spot in the NHL. Is that right? They're the number one team in the NHL right now?
Ask Elliot. He watches the standing. Very close.
Is that part of your job?
Yes, to watch
of the our partnership, his job is to know who's in first place.
When they have those big NHL, those hockey
takes
meetings,
the pressure
they say,
off you.
How are the standings?
Who's in first? Montreal. Okay. Next item on the agenda.
How would you do if we just quizzed you on things like that?
Not well.
Yeah.
Not well.
Are the,
well, I can't. Mm-hmm. I don't know anymore who's in what division.
Who's in the playoffs?
I struggle with that.
I was looking at the standings in the newspaper this morning, and I was going, the fact that the NHL has divisions is the most ridiculous thing.
Well, like, now it matters, right?
Well, and it does matter, yeah. But you're looking at this, and I'm looking at this as, and I'm going, okay, if you're a casual fan, and you look at the standings.
Well, it's no more ridiculous than baseball having divisions.
Well, we're talking about it is.
We're talking about hockey.
No, but you just want to look at the standings and go, who's in first place, who has the most points, and who's going to make the playoffs. And unless you understand how it works, you don't know.
Okay.
Which is dumb.
What newspaper are you reading?
Hey, don't start dumping on newspapers.
Same newspaper.
Well, I read the one that you sort of still write for occasionally.
I just think that we've got a standings where the top three teams aren't the ones with the three with the highest number of points. It's confusing.
Well, I would agree with that.
The one they should run is the one with the wild cards.
Yeah.
And they should do that for baseball too, but they don't do it for baseball.
But I'm saying they should do it with divisions. Is just have two conferences, 1 through 15, top eight make the playoffs. Done.
That all aside, I tried to talk to the Montreal Canadiens, and now we got on to standings here. I blame you.
Okay, sure. I'll take the blame. I'll take the heat.
Are the Montreal Canadiens legitimately the best team in the NHL right now?
I think you're wondering about that depending on how long the goalie's out. But when he's in, I think yes.
Although they did quite well when he was out.
Enough. Yeah, I agree. Right? I agree.
But now they're out with him and out with Gallagher.
Yeah. Long-term, healthy. I like them.
Did you like them the last 2 years? Or were you like most people who said, you know,
I think they're better
Carey,
now.
With Carey Price, they obviously have a chance. You can't write them off, mm-hmm. but they're not in the top five in the NHL.
I think the difference now, though, is you've got four guys with 20 or more points. Like Pacioretty, Gallagher, and the other two guys. I mean, you got a much more potent attack. Subban leading the league in assists. I mean, it's pretty good.
I think that's one thing, Michael, but I think the other thing, too, is that Subban, Pacioretty, and Gallagher have all taken huge leaps and are much, much better players. Like, P.K. Subban is so much better than the defenseman who won the Norris Trophy in 2013. It's not even funny. And Pacioretty, I think, has become one of the best offensive players in the league. And Gallagher, I'm amazed at how impactful a player Gallagher has become. Like, he has willed himself into a guy who's on the Team Canada discussion.
I remember me saying, see, this is what you do to me all the time. I said he took way too small a contract. Mm-hmm. He should have got more. And you go, nah, what's he going to be? I think he's going to be
a point-of-game player.
A point-of-game player who maybe plays on Team Canada. I think he left money on the table.
I'll do what you do, and I'll say I never said that. You know what? It's quite true, Damien. I mean, I don't remember the conversation, but I believe I could have said it. I didn't think he'd turn into what he's turned into.
It's
but
an
I,
amazing story.
I think that, you know, there's probably a lot of kids right now playing hockey who look at Brendan Gallagher and say, if I'm going to have the willpower that kid has, I can be just as good. It's an incredible story. I agree.
Just keep your hands out of the way of pucks.
Yeah.
The only thing I would say, and it's not all about Price, but it all builds from Price.
Yes.
When you have that kind of goaltending, it allows your players to develop to their full potential in other areas because you don't have to worry about, you know, that part of the game. And
is there one thing, though, that's made them, taken them from this team that is perceived to be, with Price, they have a chance, but as a general rule, they're just a middling team, to... They're legitimately
depth of
first
scoring.
Place team.
They got a lot of guys who score.
Yeah,
and
so this is the maturation of this.
The rest
collection.
Of the team in front of them.
Yeah. Yeah, and they're able. I mean, they've been able to develop guys like Dale Weiss can score goals. David Desharnais now plays on the third line. You know, Thomas Fleischmann signs with them and becomes an effective offensive player again. And it kind of goes, Jeff Petrie comes over in a trade, yeah, that, and he was that. Awful in Edmonton, and then he signs there. Mm-hmm. And then he's a good player.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I think it's a lot of, to me, like, and I agree with you what you're saying about Gallagher and Pacioretty and Subban. But to me, the Montreal's about the one gigantic piece, Carey Price, and then a whole bunch of small pieces. And the reason why that have, I think they are the best team in the NHL right now. I was sort of going through my mind, are they? And you think Chicago, well, Chicago can't be anymore. L.A.?
They're not as good as they should be.
Who knows?
But, yeah, you know, but maybe, I guess that would be the team that I would think maybe.
Nobody
the New York Rangers.
Dallas is unproven.
Yeah, I mean, the New York Rangers, the analytics say they're a team that's now all about Henrik Lundqvist and not nearly about enough other good things. And they've lost enough players. And
they spanked them on Wednesday night in New York.
Yeah, and they, you know, I would fear, if I was a Ranger fan, I'd fear for the future because they gave up so much to take a run at it the last couple of years and get players like Martin Saint-Louis.
And may fall short.
And if you don't get it, then you really leave yourself in a hole.
You know, the other thing too, Bob, is that the coach gets no credit there. Like, they tear
He's
him apart.
He's an excellent coach.
I agree with you. Like, he has them playing a system that they force you, they're fast, they force you into places you don't want to go. Like, you're not supposed to dump the puck out of your own zone anymore. Like, that's supposed to be a bad strategy. They do it more than anybody in the NHL. He says, look, if we don't have a play, I don't care what you do, just get it out there because I'd rather have the puck down at the other end of the ice than us in trouble in our end. And they're so fast. If they throw it out, they beat teams to pucks and they create score. Like, he has created
a
way to play.
I mean, they have speed. They have extraordinary speed, and he has coached effectively using his asset.
Absolutely.
His greatest asset.
If you talk to people in Pittsburgh, they say he didn't get nearly the credit he deserved for when that team won a championship with Sidney Crosby, and Dan Bylsma was the coach. But he kind of put the whole thing together and the structure and everything, and then Bylsma built on that. And, you know, I mean, I think he's matured as a coach.
Yeah,
Michel
and a person.
Therrien. Yeah, I mean, I remember his first go-around in Montreal and the dumb penalty he took against Carolina, the bench penalty in the playoffs. And now he's a much calmer guy. And he is the rarest of cases in professional sports is a coach or GM who comes back to a team for the second go-around and it actually works. And I guess John Gibbons might be another example. But
baseball,
generally doesn't work, and it seems to be working for Therrien.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so we're all kind of on the same boat here. You know, Montreal Canadiens, full marks, almost unquestionably the best team in the East. That being the case, who's the best team in the West?
You know, I will say this. They're not now, and I listen to the point that Damian just made about them. Get them into a playoff series, and I want to see the team that's going to knock out Chicago. You don't, eh?
No, I don't. I think ultimately their lack of depth on their third and fourth lines will come.
Maybe.
I thought you were going to say L.A.
No, I thought you
were going to say Dallas.
No, well, Dallas is still, like, they're still a bit young. Like, they still have games like they had the one against Ottawa the other night. I look at Chicago, and when it really counts, when it really matters, you know, they have... And that Kane line looks awesome, and there's still Taves and Keith. I just want to see who's going to take them out.
I think the best team in the West should be or is about to be or needs one more point. Nashville? Piece to be Nashville.
Yeah, I'm with you. That, Eric Staal.
Hard to argue.
Maybe.
Eric Staal on Nashville to me, and there, that's going to be something.
But we've said that for a while.
Yeah.
You know, and I'll tell you, you know, in their window, Pekka Rinne is way older than you think he is. You know, so there is some urgency there, although their young defense is going to be is terrific, and they're young in a lot of places. But I think Nashville is right there.
I mean, the one team we didn't talk about the East at all was Washington. Very overlooked. Yeah.
Well, I think Washington, New York are the contenders along with Montreal, don't you think?
I think Washington's really good.
Yeah.
I do like Washington.
I mean, they've got scoring, they've got the goaltending, they've got the coaching, they've got...
It's just easy to overlook them because they've failed so often. I mean, they're sort of the San Jose of the East, aren't they?
Well, it's interesting, too. Like, when you look at when Washington was inarguably ascendant, it was Montreal that deflated them back when, you know, Carey Price wasn't good enough to be the goalie. And
Yaroslav Halak.
That's right. And they've kind of hung around, reinvented themselves multiple times. And now, who would have thought that 7 years after that, 6 years, 5 years maybe since that series?
Yeah, I mean,
they're looking maybe the most legitimate they've ever looked.
Yeah, Washington, the only thing about Washington that I think is kind of funny is they've got a big chunk of the team that's got to win now.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe Alex Ovechkin's part of that group because he's 30 now, right?
Mm-hmm.
And has never won and has always failed or has been part of teams that have failed. And then they've got this really young group with Kuznetsov and Burakovsky and even a guy like John Carlson. So there's this sort of, they're kind of split. And, you know, it'll be interesting to see how they are a good team.
I like them a lot.
They are a good team. But, you know, Ovechkin at some point has to have one of those playoffs, right? He has to have one of those playoffs where everybody goes, wow, he did finally. And we've seen guys do it, but we just never seen him do it.
Well, you know, Damian, the amazing thing is now, and you remind me of this, last year, if you go back into the playoffs, they beat the Islanders in 7 tough games. They lost to the Rangers in overtime in Game 7. Like, those were 2 tough series.
And they couldn't score in that series.
And he played less than he ever played.
Yeah.
Like, it was like Stamkos. Like, there were nights where he was playing 16 minutes, 15 minutes. Like, you know, like they almost went, they were this close to going to the Stanley Cup semifinals with Ovechkin nights where he was barely put in position to succeed.
Well, you tell me, what's the biggest goal that Alexander Ovechkin has ever scored?
Ooh, that's a great question.
I mean, you'd say that about a lot of great players, and you'd think of one or two or the other. And I'm sure he has scored a lot.
Well, I mean, you go back to that series him and Crosby had the first go around when they were trading hat tricks and all of that.
That was what I was thinking, right? Like, series.
And then
But he's unusual in that regard. Like, you throw out most players, and all of us could give you one goal. Even Wayne Gretzky, all the goals that he scored, everybody remembers this, the goal against Mike Vernon, the slap shot goal against Calgary.
And I'm not an Ovi hater. Like, I think he gets a lot more grief than he probably deserves sometimes. But you're right, Damian. There isn't that hallmark, like, maybe the goal where he lit his stick on fire.
that was more of an individual.
Yes, absolutely.
And maybe it's still ahead.
But can you score those kind of goals without team success, right? And right. we're talking about, they were a President's Cup team. They were, you know, they were the ascendant team parallel to the Penguins, who just couldn't quite get there. And then the post 2010, when Ovi, everyone thought the guy was done, right? Mm-hmm. He has a minus 35 season, a couple of those, it seemed. And then that's what's sort of really interesting about this story is that he's the way you look at Alexander, the way you look at Ovechkin, it's like there's been 4 chapters to this guy's career.
But to me, I don't know how, well, what we're talking about him. He is what he has always been, a tremendous offensive player.
Yeah.
One of the greatest offensive players ever to play in the NHL.
Mm-hmm.
Full stop, period.
Yeah.
And that's what he is. He's like Dominique Wilkins. He's like Dan Marino.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Is he like Mike Bossy was?
Well, they were a hell of a team, and Bossy was – People forget Bossy's how good a player goals. Bossy was until his back just ruined his career. Yeah. But like he was still at the top of the game when he got hurt.
And a two-way player.
But he was an elite goal scorer.
But he was a two-way player. Two-way player. You had to for Al Arbor. Like, you had to play both ways.
And that's why you're always into these conversations. Now Barry Trotz is the one who's holding up. Oh, you know, he's really improved. He's a 200-foot player. He does this. He's a great, truly great offensive hockey player.
Well, let's talk about Trotz, though, for a second, because – you know, here's a guy who had Nashville for how many years? Like, forever?
17 years.
Yeah.
17 years.
And brought them into some level of competence, even prominence.
Mm-hmm.
Then gets dismissed, goes to Washington, and has kind of revitalized that franchise.
Oh, he's a terrific coach.
Yeah.
I think most of us thought he was a pretty good coach when he was at Nashville.
But he's got to win, too. I mean, the one year where they thought they were went into the playoffs favored, the year I guess they got Forsberg and they lost right away
in a brutal series. Like, yeah, they got Santa, like it was 205 point teams and they just lost.
Yeah,
like last year Nashville, you forget, like that Chicago series was unbelievably tight. Like there was triple overtime, there was double overtime. But the other thing too about Trotz is he's never had offense like he has now, and that's what I'm really
well. The
curious
perception
to see.
Always was that he coached.
He never had.
He just never had the. He didn't have
never
the players.
Had any, like, he had Paul Kariya for 2 years once, but it was later in Kariya's career.
Yeah, yeah.
But he never had guys in their prime like he has here with Backstrom. And this Kuznetsov kid is, he's a game breaker. He looks like he's turning into one.
Let's quickly run through the Western Canada.
I thought we were going to run through the rest of the National Hockey League.
No, but quickly. I don't remember a year where we talked less about the Vancouver Canucks. What the heck are they?
I just think this is – the Vancouver Canucks are wasting their time. They are spinning their wheels, trying to still win with the Sedins, and all they're doing is putting off what
the
they have to do, and that is pull it apart, be crappy, get a couple guys, start back
up. Yeah, but in the meantime, the Sedins are in the top 10 in scoring again.
Absolutely,
and it's
they
kind
can't
of like,
win.
Like –
they can't win.
I don't know. But I mean,
do you think they can win the cup?
No.
Do you think they can win a round?
Maybe, but no.
Maybe.
Right. But so, it's sort of like
they're stuck. I'm not saying it's an easy way
out. Yeah, but that's part of the NHL life cycle too, right? It is like you're going to be so 2011 they were probably the best team in the NHL.
You know what it's part of? The fact that they're twins. And you can't move them without moving the other one, and no one can absorb a $15 million cap hit. Or what.
I know what I'm honestly the sense I get inside that organization, Damon, is they'll never ask them to trade.
No, that's what I'm saying. But I'm saying you.
Well, it's a very difficult.
If you only
deal,
had one
stuck.
Of them,
yeah. Sure, yeah, it'd be
you are absolutely stuck.
But the only thing though about what you're saying is they're on very affordable contracts.
But you can't trade them.
Well, I don't even know if they'd want
to. If you're going
to
rebuild the organization, and there's lots of evidence that you have to rebuild that organization.
The point is you've got them, and they're going to stay there, and they're going to be there for what? Another two, three, four?
Two at least, right. Maybe more.
Years?
But you know what, Damien? That city has shown they will not tolerate losing. It's the toughest thing about
or even mediocrity. Like it's a soft ticket there.
Like Mike Gillis's team was a President's Trophy winner, Stanley Cup Game 7. The moment it went sour, the building was empty, and he was fired.
Yep.
Like Pat Quinn and Brian Burke will tell you, they had times in there they started losing, attendance just plummeted.
In my mind, Vancouver is exactly where Toronto was in the final years with Matt Sundin, trying to desperately figure out a way to take a. Maybe if we get in the playoffs, we'll get lucky and everything will come together and all that. And all those years missing opportunities to do what you had to do.
That's, okay. Calgary. Puzzled by their performance or not? Was last year a mirage?
What's a little bit interesting about Calgary is this time last year we were talking about their defense, right? And Giordano and Brody and all down the list. Chris Russell. Wow. Maybe the best group of defensemen outside Nashville in the NHL or whatever. And then all of a sudden, you know, so now
it's
you've
like,
like this year, like up front, they, you know, Bennett's taking, everyone's talking about him all of a sudden, and Goudreau's doing what he's doing, and Monahan, like no one's really worried about them. But what was supposed to be the strength of their team is kind of like Giordano, sort of. It's almost like you misread it. And obviously, analytically, last year, that was the story, and it was all goaltending. So maybe it's as simple as that.
Are they a one-hit wonder?
No, because I think they have so much young talent up front.
That, they can bounce back?
That you'd like to think they can. And if anything's going to be the what's going to give a team staying power, it would be depth at the back end. I guess Dougie Hamilton's been kind of a mystery.
Not a mystery, a disaster.
Right. But does anyone know why he's been a disaster?
Elliot?
What? I think, you know what's interesting? One of the Boston guys told me that the worst thing, Dougie Hamilton reads everything that is said about him, and they worried about him in a Canadian market because of that. And I think there is something to that. It started poorly, and now he's hearing everything, and it only makes it worse.
And it's not getting better.
And it's not getting better. The
contract's
on his head. Like,
this is not a good situation.
It's just not fitting.
Are they a playoff team?
No.
They don't look like it.
You know what, Damien, though? That division is so bad.
Yeah.
Like normally I would say that they probably wouldn't be, but there's the L.A. should scare you, but they're just not as good as they should be. Yeah.
They just don't have a goalie.
There's going to be somebody in that division, whether it's Anaheim or someone else, that's going to come that's missing the playoffs right now. It's going to make it because nobody in that division scares you.
And I would make the argument about Calgary similar to the one with Vancouver. The best thing that might happen to Calgary is that they finish in the bottom five. Because while they had that exciting year last year, and they do have the young players that you're talking about, probably what they need is another stud player.
If they really
to then be able to jump up and be a championship team. If you have Bennett and Monahan and Gaudreau and those guys in the back end,
and
now you
Kachuk
add
or whoever,
Matthew Tkachuk or one of the two Finns or whatever, then all of a sudden you've got a real
chance. Let me throw this out there. So this is instead of being a team that's a playoff team and on the rise, they're maybe still in a little bit in that rebuilding gathering phase.
Yes, yeah.
Okay, so does a guy like Giordano, does he mesh with the age group of the rest of your lineup?
You know, it's funny. We were doing the show.
And keep in mind that most people, like now people, isn't the talk that Brody's actually the real key to that defense?
Yeah. We were doing a show the other night. It was myself and Doug McLean and Leah Hextall. And we were just talking about stuff. And Leah said on the air, well, maybe, you know, something about Mark Giordano. And then, you know, or would they trade him? And we all sort of went, oh, no. But then when you actually start adding it up, he's 30, 30?
He's kind of Dion Phaneuf-ish.
No, he's older than that. Like, right. He's like 33.
He took a long.
And all of a sudden, that's a very interesting point. Now, he was terrific for them. He's a leader on that team, all those sorts of stuff. But it's an interesting, he is kind of separated from their main core
age-wise
group. That it
32.
So he is 32. And for my money.
Didn't he just sign a long-term deal, right?
Yeah, he did. For my money, TJ Brody is the guy.
But if you look at their defense, they have Weidman coming off after next year. They have
maybe Russell after
this year. I'm not trading Giordano until I know. Like, all of a sudden, you could be going from a strength to really thin.
If you have
Giordano, Brody, and Hamilton, I think you're okay.
Well, and it's no. They didn't have a first round pick this year because they traded away. But I don't think it's any coincidence that they drafted two: Rasmus Anderson and Oliver Shillington. And they've got them. They're hoping that these guys are going to develop quickly.
I don't think you're strong enough yet on them. And also, you know what? You still got young players. Giordano sets a good example. You're probably looking at this like he's going to get back to what we're used to from him. I'm not looking to.
But it is a bit of a mystery. Now, he did have an injury late last season.
Tore his bicep.
It is a bit of a mystery what has happened. Add him to the mystery of a bunch of guys around the league right now. We're all sort of going, you brought up Eric Staal. You know, a bunch of guys were going, what has happened to this guy?
Yeah.
Winnipeg. What do we think?
Why are they losing games right now?
They look awful. I think that's a really good team, Bob. You know, one thing that Paul Maurice always says is judge us not by how many shots we give up, but the quality of chances we give up. By any metrics right now,
it's a shooting gallery.
You're judging them poorly.
Is there any possibility when you have two guys as prominent as Byfuglien and Ladd as unrestricted? I mean, we're always talking about Stamkos, right? And what kind of mood that creates in Tampa. And even a smaller market with two guys that are equally as prominent within that market, could that be an issue in that room?
I have asked that question before, and, you know, it was rebuffed. I think...
I'm sorry you were rebuffed.
Yeah, you know, it's okay. I my feelings were hurt momentarily, and then I moved on.
You went moved on but to the 29th thought.
I don't think the Stamkos thing is affecting Tampa. I really don't. But I could see this one in Winnipeg, not with Byfuglien. I think Byfuglien's the kind of guy who he'll play anywhere and he'll be happy. Like, I don't think it bothers him. But the lad thing I could see being a problem.
You know what Winnipeg is this year or last year? So you know what they were last year? They were the Toronto Blue Jays this year. And they roared into the postseason down the stretch, and everybody thought, this is a terrific team, and look at them, and they've got all this size, and they got young players, and they're going to add Nick Ehlers, and they're going to be terrific again next year. And that's why sometimes it just doesn't work out that way.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm mystified by Winnipeg. I really like that.
Isn't it about 80?
Is it salvageable, though?
You know what the only problem is, Bob, is they play in a brutal division where one really good team is going to miss the playoffs.
And maybe that's a big part of it. Like, they just play in a tough division.
Yeah.
And also, like, 80% of the time, I find, especially with hockey, and you're looking at teams and you're going, what? You're mystified. You're scratching your head. 80% of the time, it's goaltending.
Yeah, and when they made that trade last year.
Now they got one guy out, right?
Right. So. And when they made that trade last year, it really worked for them. The only thing I asked at the time was, okay, so they traded Evander Kane, who was the fourth pick of that year, and a legitimate scoring power forward. Now maybe he had to go, but when he left town, that meant they somewhere along the line are going to have to find that guy. So who's the deep threat on the Winnipeg Jets?
But ironically, they played better after they traded him.
No, I know. Well, they did. They played terrific down the stretch, but now they have to deal with the reality is of they don't have that kind of player up front. Now, maybe Nick Ehlers is going to become that kind of player, but he's not that player yet.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so you look up and down their forward line. Yeah, they got some guys who can Scheifele and Wheeler and, you know, stuff. But do they have a game breaker that could make them into, a truly outstanding team? You know,
they need a Phil Kessel.
Oh, God.
You know what, Mike? You talk about goaltending. Their goalie of the future is playing for them today. He's getting his first NHL start, Connor Hellebuck, and he's winning 2-1 against Minnesota. This is the guy who came out of nowhere to lead U.S. to the bronze medal at the World Championships last year. I'm curious to see how ready this guy is. I really am. He could be a difference maker for them.
We've avoided the one Western Canadian team that we spend.
I think we all know the answer there.
Most fascinating team.
Well, it's an, you know,
ever?
If they, I mean, if they were 20,
I could talk about the Edmonton Oilers more than 29 other teams combined.
Like the Sixers?
Almost.
No, like, that is next level.
No,
bad.
The difference is the Sixers are.
No, they're just bad.
They're bad. They're like just, intent. They mean to be
they're
bad.
Trying
they're trying
to be bad.
And they're doing a great job.
You know, they're very good.
They're doing the all-time.
They're exceeding
best job
their expectations at bad. But I mean, Edmonton.
Edmonton should be better. Should
like
even
novel,
be great.
Man.
Yeah.
How is it that this is not working?
You know, we had their game on Wednesday against Carolina, and it was inexcusable. Like, it's okay if you lose. When you're that team, it's not okay to lose like that.
Well, you know what my theory is.
What's that?
Well, that core that they established before McDavid has to be broken up.
Like they're
because for whatever all those years of losing and like Taylor Hall, I'm not saying he has to.
They're a little
bit
diseased kind of thing.
Well, they've been losing for a long time. That's all they've ever known, and they've been asked as very young guys to be leaders on that team. It hasn't worked out, and now I just think you got to bust up that core and do some other things. But the other, I mean, they're always going to have a challenge there. Can attract free agents of particular note.
Mm-hmm.
That's always the way it's going to be, and. You know, when you're doing stuff like trading away Jeff Petrie, trading away Devan Dubnyk, who becomes a star, trading away, like they've not been astute with some of their assets and how they've dealt with.
Well, and I think the one thing that makes me curious about them is even now they're going to get another great pick is, you know, Nurse, right? So Darnell Nurse, you drafted him. He's probably your most promising defense prospect, but he's probably still a couple of years away from being the kind of player that can really command an NHL game just because defensemen take longer. And so
well, you
now,
could argue we shouldn't be in the NHL.
Right. And so because they went so heavy with their forwards and all those drafts, you almost would have been smarter to go heavy on defense early And
there was one pick where something did happen, and that was the Yakupov Ryan Murray pick. And of course,
what happened, Elliot?
Well, the team, the scouts wanted to draft Ryan Murray, yeah, and they were overruled by the owner, who wanted Yakupov.
And why did it, what's the story, Elliot?
Well, I think the story is that the I don't know what the story is. There's all sorts of rumors about why it happened, but it happened. And now, unfortunately, the thing is Ryan Murray is a guy who has not been able to stay healthy.
So that's what I mean.
That was
so
Morgan Riley's draft, right?
Yes.
Yeah. But even that, the one thing I would say is that I think they could have been more imaginative what they did with those high picks.
Yeah, maybe packaged and
move down 1 year, add to your roster.
I was going to
still
say,
get a first round pick instead of just take them on.
Well, you know, let me just throw this at you. There was no question when the Edmonton Oilers got the first pick in last year's draft who they were going to take. There was absolutely no question, and it would probably will wind up being one of the great picks of all time.
Yeah,
but what if they hadn't got that pick? Would they have been more inclined to package that pick with one of the younger players to get them what they really need?
Well I remember
I remember being on this show one time
and saying, okay, well, what if you had traded down to the two, taken Eichel, presumably?
But you couldn't do that.
Well, you could.
Well, McDavid is such a generational player, or was perceived to be that, and there's, you know, I mean, obviously the sample size is pretty limited because
he's something, though.
He's pretty good.
Yeah, he's really something.
You know?
Oh, I agree.
I think it screwed them in some ways.
Well, I think they're closer. I think despite all their failings, they're about to get somewhere. And the injury to McDavid obviously is devastating because of that. And that would change this whole story. I think, you know, you look the way Drysdale's playing, and that kid's going to be pretty good. You know what? He's point and a half of the game now.
Yeah, he's ahead of Crosby. Like, it's ridiculous. I mean,
everybody's ahead of Crosby.
But you know, so all of a sudden you're looking, and your centers are Drysdale, McDavid, and
Nugent Hopkins.
That's pretty good.
Austin Matthews. Yeah,
but Taylor Hall's pretty damn good.
You know what? The other thing this has shown is
that
just because you have a number one pick doesn't mean you have a franchise player. Like, no disrespect to Hall, Nugent Hopkins, and Yakupov.
Well, Hall might be.
Not in the same class as this guy.
No, but he's an elite NHL player.
So it shows that even if you get the number, you got to get the right number one.
Sure.
Right?
It's funny, though, what Bob says is true in one way. Like, and it sounds counterintuitive, so I'm not saying like it makes sense, but the guy they really needed wasn't Connor McDavid. It was Noah Hanifin.
Correct.
But you couldn't take him.
Yeah, but that goes to my point where, okay, this is your draft.
But you couldn't, and you couldn't trade down.
Sure.
No.
They'll be able to right that mistake.
But it wasn't what
this year.
They didn't need another young offensive player.
Correct.
But had they drafted Noah Hanifin, that goes to my point where, you know, as good as he may end up being, he's probably 2-3 years away from being as good as they need him to be.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So
will they? We got to make the take the break here. Will they wind up trading one of those first round draft choices? Maybe at the trade deadline, or most certainly at the end of the season.
Do they have to do that now? I agree with Damien. I think one of those guys is going to go. I think they would trade one of those guys for Travis Hamonic right now if they could, but they can't. But yes, I do think that but it's like we talked about with the Blue Jays last hour.
Chiarelli's just watching.
He's going to take his time and figure out which one goes.
Yeah.
By the way, Damien, as you were saying,
yes, Elliot,
Nick Eagler's has scored his first goal in 15 games.
There you go.
Don't we have a story on Sportsnet saying he's going to be the next superstar? I'm serious.
We might. I don't know.
It's like it's on.
Did you write it?
No. I wouldn't have known. I would have to back my truck up over him to find out who he was first.
ID, please. When we come back, the 103rd edition of the Grey Cup will go this weekend in Winnipeg. I assume a lot of people know about this. Will as many people be watching this event as we have become accustomed to? Or is there a real change afoot? We'll address that subject when Primetime continues on the Sportsnet radio and television networks.
Did Bob McCowan just say what I think he said? You can rewind Primetime Sports Podcast when you subscribe at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan, on demand. On demand. On demand. On demand.
Now, more of Bob McCowan and Primetime Sports on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Don't forget, if you want to eavesdrop on the commercial breaks, pay-per-listen is only $19.95 per show.
The outtakes would be good.
Contact.
They'd be actionable.
Your nearest Rogers representative for the details.
I'm out of this segment.
Would you like to tell that story on the air?
No.
Okay.
I have a better one.
Okay. No way, really?
That I want to
no,
hear.
No, I don't want to hear.
We're 9 minutes away from a better story, and you won't hear it out there. The 103rd edition of the Grey Cup goes this Sunday in Winnipeg. Is it just me, or is there a chance that this will be, if not the worst, then one of the worst rated Grey Cup games, at least in recent memory? Has the buzz disappeared? It's hard to sit in Toronto, where there's never been a real big CFL buzz or Grey Cup buzz, other than partially when the game is here, and try and assess the rest of the country. But there's some evidence that things aren't great in this league right now.
Are we qualified, given?
Well, as long as we offer up a disclaimer.
Okay.
And
it's on,
that's
it's
what
on
happens.
A rival
people
network,
are, yeah,
people, right?
people on who are dyed-in-the-wool CFL fans will say, "You because you're Rogers and you don't carry the CFL and TSN does,
yeah,
that's why you're slagging it." So it is with, this is our disclaimer, no, there are no CFL games on our network. So you can not listen if you don't want to. If you're just going to dismiss anything we have to say, then carry on.
What are the most recent
CFL fans here.
I'm a fan.
And I've been a fan for 40-some years.
And I'm gone.
And he's gone, and you're not. So we're split.
I left with Cinnamon and Sokolowski.
So we're split. And what I would say is,
what are the most recent numbers for somebody like me who doesn't?
I honestly,
this year has not been. Last 2 years,
they're down about 20.
Yeah, but typically, regardless, right? The Grey Cup always comes home with huge numbers, right?
It will get good numbers.
Okay.
Like the Grey Cup,
you think so?
Yeah. The question is what they're going to be compared to other years. It's still going to be. Like,
well, that's the comparative in any event.
No, but like if you're going to look at it, rank it for the week on television, it's going to do very well.
I mean, it was the perfect storm against the Canadian Football League this year.
Saskatchewan.
A nomad team in Toronto. Saskatchewan out of it early. The Toronto Blue Jays sucking all the oxygen out of the summer sports market.
Across the country.
Yep. Across the country. And a brand of football that some people still love, and some people say isn't as exciting as it used to be. That's a debate that we can have over whether you like the CFL the way it used to be or whether you like it now. So it was kind of a perfect storm against it. My question is, and I know Jeffrey Orridge gave his State of the Union address today, how's he going to fix it? How are you going to fix what's gone? Because you don't know whether Saskatchewan's going to be good every year.
Mm-hmm.
Like they had a really nice run with Saskatchewan mm-hmm. being really good. And there's nobody knows for sure whether Toronto's going to be any better. And the Blue Jays, if you believe our friend Bob McCown, are going to be a good team for a few years.
Let me start where we started. And, yeah, so it's on the other network, has been exclusively on the other network for a long time. And you just wonder strategically if...
You can say TSN. It's okay.
If long-term, maybe that has hurt them a bit. I mean, TSN did an incredible job building that property from some pretty low ebbs in the 90s, let's say. But, you know, you're now in a situation where, like, I've worked here for, it'll be 5 years in May. I've yet to write my first CFL story. I think I wrote one CFL column, and it was as related to the mess at the
Well,
at
so
the
do you field. Think that's so because of lack of interest, or is it because,
well, I just
okay, it's their property,
well,
we're not going to
well,
promote
look at
their
the
property.
NFL, right? They're on multiple platforms.
Yeah, but this is an exclusive, a property that is exclusive to the enemy.
Sure. And maybe I'm just wondering if in a market like Canada, where you have two primary sports voices, you're shut out of one, maybe they would have been wise at some point to make some kind of deal with the CBC. So you're at least kind of broadening your reach in that respect.
You know, and
I
just,
don't know.
Just
but they invested
point, going,
so heavily.
Going forward,
TSN
that might
invested
be
so heavily in
I'm CFL. Not sure about that argument because, but the one thing I would say is that in an era of dwindling media resources across the country, particularly in newspapers, I don't think they're getting anywhere near the media coverage in general.
Sure.
That they used to, because I can tell you the newspaper where I used to work, the Toronto Star, they've got to make decisions. They've got so many people. They got so many.
A limited number of people.
What are we going to do with the Canadian Football League?
Mm-hmm.
How are we going to cover the Canadian Football
League? And don't you have to respond, as we do, to what you perceive the audience wants to discuss or wants to have you write about? You can't force it down their throats. If you give the Toronto Argonauts two pages in the Toronto Star every day, aren't you spinning your wheels? There just aren't enough people that have demonstrated a level of interest.
Well, the only thing with that, Bob, and I come at this maybe from a basketball perspective, was always the number of tweets, emails, whatever, back in the day, phone calls you used to get would be, you know, look at a lot of excitement, enthusiasm, resources put into basketball, but more people watch curling and the CFL. And you would kind of want to argue with them, and then you'd look and you go, you're right. people watch curling in the CFL.
You know what,
I just don't know any of them, not even one.
The difference between basketball and the CFL is basketball always had a young fan base. Like, you would go to Raptor games back in 1995.
There was they would grow up.
It was
them.
Growth.
Sure.
You saw the potential
but,
for
but
growth.
Regardless,
the CFL's fan base has always been older.
Right, well, but regardless of that, Elliot,
mm-hmm.
I mean, from what the numbers I can recall regarding Grey Cup is usually in the 3-4 million viewer range, right? They're enormous numbers.
Yeah.
I mean, man, there'd have to be 10 basketball games before you get 4 million people watching, right? Like, it's still got a hold on a significant group
just
of the population.
Just the final now, though. Just the final.
Right.
Well, I mean, you've seen a downsizing of the whole league. The Hamilton Tiger Cats used to play in a 28,000 seat stadium. They now play in a 22,000 seat stadium. The Toronto Argonauts are going to move from the Dome to BMO. The Montreal Alouettes were lauded for years for sellout after sellout. They play in a 25,000-seat stadium.
And don't sell out anymore.
Yeah, Ottawa.
After they...
In Edmonton, which I think they lead the league in attendance still.
They still got the biggest park, right?
And they have a big park, but they draw about 30, 31, 32. Mm-hmm. Where they used to basically half
55.
Full. And Vancouver, all kinds of problems there. Yeah. Another David Braley special. So... you know, it's TVs. I would argue without TSN, the league would have folded.
Mm-hmm.
And
that's interesting.
And TV
maybe.
Is a big, big part of they're surviving. So this is important for them on Sunday to get for people to watch.
Back when we still had the rights at CBC, remember Mike McCarthy? He loved the CFL as much as anybody did. He was working for Hamilton at the time. The NFL expanded their rosters and they took a practice squad. And he said to me, that's going to hurt us big time. And I said, why? And he goes, because that's going to be 30. It was 30 NFL teams at the time. That's going to be 120 more players that we're not going to get.
And probably most significantly 30 quarterbacks.
And those are going to be players that are going to
really
be stars
league,
in our league.
It?
Like, remember Gizmo Williams, like in the 80s, like he was one of my favorite players in any sport. You don't see, like, there's not, like, this is a league where a 40-year-old quarterback was named the most outstanding player last night. And I do think that that is kind of an issue where you look at the star power and it's decreased.
We wish our friends over at TSN and the Canadian Football League great success with their 103rd Grey Cup. I will be most interested next week to see how many people actually watched. Is this still the institution it has been for decades in this country? The must-watch in November Grey Cup game on Sunday night. I'm not sure that this isn't the beginning of something else, and it might not be too good. Thanks to Damian Cox, Elliot Friedman, Michael Grange for joining us on the program. You have yourselves a swell weekend. If the Crick don't rise, we'll see you Monday. Same place, same channel. Good night from Toronto.